This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Karina Anglada.
I don't get that, but I wouldn't have guessed that.
And Darius Thomas.
I'm cool. You cool? I'm cool.
In the world of sports, everyone has a different journey. Some even take an unconventional route or road less traveled. That's exactly the case as it relates to Sam Edwards, Assistant Director of Creative Video at Georgia Tech. Sam's path to tech may not have been a straight one, but it's one that was created by being authentically himself.
Time that is?
I'm there.
Make the call.
42. There is a delay. I did mine on time.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller Effects, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit BallerFX on YouTube and get started today.
Welcome everybody to the Creative Sports Podcast. We hope that you've enjoyed the episodes this year so far. Got a longtime listener who's been trying to be here with us, but, you know, schedules do what they do. We have Samuel Edwards, or as we call him, Sam, who's the Assistant Director of Creative Video at Georgia Tech. Sam, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for hopping on.
Sam, before we, you know, jump into, you know, the current stuff, let's talk about how your journey of how you got to be where you are today. Talk about your creative journey.
You know how they say the sports industry is a lot of who you know? My career actually started in news. I was a photojournalist for a news station, Local 24 in Memphis. There was one story we did on the Memphis Grizzlies. So I ended up going to the arena. We were doing the story on fan interaction, kind of just the crowds and how everything was going. And me being the type of person I am, everyone I saw with a camera, I just struck up a conversation with them and just asked kind of how they got where they were, what steps did they take, who do they know, things like that. And one of the guys I was working with named Steph Allen, who's currently still at the Grizzlies as the director of photography, he kind of took me under his wing when I was at the news and kind of taught me a lot of different things. And he ended up leaving the news and going to the Memphis Grizzlies. So they were looking for someone to come in, be like a video producer and things like that. So to be honest, major shout out to Steph. He took a chance on me, kind of threw my name in the hat, interviewed for the Memphis Grizzlies. And that's where my sports career started, as a video producer for the Memphis Grizzlies in like 2016, I think. So a lot of cross networking, just kind of putting my name out there and just meeting people that could lead me to where I needed to go.
That's awesome. I have a question about with that assignment, that news assignment with the Grizzlies, like, did you sign up for it, or did you hear about it, or did you like pitch the story to like help get yourself there? I'm curious.
No. So when I was at the news, I was the last one hired. So I got all of the fluff pieces, breaking news, things
like
that. Got
it. Okay.
And the reporter I was working with, our story fell through. So they're like, it's a big game down at the FedEx Forum tonight. Let's just go out there, talk to fans and things like that. And of course, being from Memphis, I'm a big Grizzlies fan. So it wasn't my first time there.
Got it.
That was my first time being like on the court, like back, you know, back of house, kind of backstage type of thing. And it blew my mind kind of just to see how it worked.
That's so cool. I love, though, that you went with intention, because you were like,
oh, yeah,
I'm going to get to know these people, because I mean, like you said, it's about who you know and also who knows you. So I love that. That's a great story. Yeah.
You discussed how you were a photojournalist, like go all the way back. Like, were you always a creative, or when did that creative bug just start to kind of, you know, poke at you, or was that something that you
developed?
I would say I kind of grew up with it. Like, I have not really had many other interests professionally. I can go back to, I remember maybe my junior year of high school, I had an HTC Hero, and me and my neighbor would just film basketball videos because we used to play outside. And it kind of just stemmed from there. And I went to school not thinking it would be a career path. And I went to school to be an English teacher. And I took like a couple of electives, editing classes. And like we spoke about earlier, it's about who you know. And I was moving back home after I graduated, and there was a part-time editing position at the news. So I started as an overnight editor. I'm talking 2 a.m. to noon kind of deal. And I kind of, that's how I ended up working my way to being a photojournalist, just saying, hey, I'm interested in the camera work and learning how these things work. And so it all started back when I was like 16. And I've, that's really pretty much all I've ever done was just be a creative.
That's crazy. You had the graveyard shift. Are you night owl or a morning person? Because you had like both.
I never recovered from that, because even on my, when I was a photojournalist, I worked 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. So I've just always, I've just been a night owl ever since.
That's wild. You know, I'm a night owl, so.
You know what's funny? Is that I thought that I was going to go, well, I have an English degree. I went to school thinking that I was going to be a English teacher for it. I was going to do Teach for America. Took some
TFA.
Took some journalism classes and was working in the athletics department. And like right when I was graduating, the job came open. And so I never taught.
Yep.
But
divine timing right there.
Absolutely. I was telling someone just today that it was by the grace of the good Lord that I wasn't a teacher, because all of the karma for the hell that I put my teachers through growing up.
Yeah. Would have came back.
Would have came back. Like, I would have had to deal with me's. And so, you know, thankful for that divine timing. So let's talk about the, you know, you get to the Grizzlies. Talk about what that experience was like. And what year did you get? So you said it was about 2016, right?
I started 2017.
So talk about where the organization was, because you grew up watching the Grizzlies or being able to see it, right? So where was the franchise, and like kind of how were you adjusting to going from news to actual sports coverage internally?
The franchise was kind of like on the back end of the core four with like Zebo and Marc Gasol. I think maybe my second year is when Marc Gasol got traded. So the franchise was kind of in limbo.
That was wild. I remember. Yeah, that was such big news.
We were at a media availability, and we were about to talk to him when the news broke.
No.
So seeing, it was a whole thing. I won't get into, you know, the details about that. But
sure.
I think speaking on like kind of how that ties in with news, like when I came in, we were doing more like story-driven pieces. Like if we were out in the community, we were doing things like that. If someone had like a giveaway, I remember I did something with Mike Conley years ago where he was like buying shoes for people at the Nike factory, kind of out where I stayed. So when I started in sports, it was more like narrative-driven. It wasn't strictly game coverage. And that came kind of later. And even with the narrative stuff, when we started the 2K League, it was like Grizz Game and All Access, where I did like a series of kind of just following the guys. So my intro to sports was more of a narrative storytelling type of thing versus game coverage.
That's awesome. I feel like that probably gave you a good foundation, though, because at the end of the day, I was just talking to someone about this yesterday, editing, whether you are working on a social piece or a narrative piece or a short film, it all comes back to storytelling. So I love that that was kind of like a foundation. And in news, you have to do that as well, right? Like when there's a slow news day, what do you have to do? You still have to tell a story, you know, about fans that are around a big game and things like that. So that's really cool. I'm looking at your LinkedIn and it's so interesting, like hearing about your background in news and then making that jump to then work with the Grizzlies. From there, you ended up in Atlanta. Take us through the next couple stops to where you got to Georgia Tech, because that wasn't your first, Georgia Tech wasn't your first place when you got to Atlanta.
It was not. So it happened like towards after COVID. Me and my family, we were looking to move to Atlanta. And when I met my wife, she was currently in Atlanta. Then we ended up living in Memphis and things like that. So someone reached out to me on LinkedIn, of course, and everyone was remote.
That's
so
I was funny. I said I was looking at your LinkedIn.
So I think he was a senior marketing, the VP of marketing at the Hall of Fame, reached out to me and asked like if I wanted to like move to Atlanta, kind of work in the Hall of Fame, kind of
college football Hall of Fame,
college football Hall of Fame. And kind of, you know, work alongside them and kind of see. And I talked to my wife, or bad girlfriend at the time. And I was like, hey, I really think, you know, this would be like my foot into opening more doors for me in this, the city of Atlanta. I think it's a good opportunity. We've always talked about moving to Atlanta. So I moved down first, worked at the Hall of Fame, and great staff I was working with there. I met a great friend of mine, mutual friend of me and Darius, Terrence Beavers, who's currently at Georgia. I had a great time at the Hall of Fame, but working alongside Terrence, he kind of like showed me how the industry works in Atlanta. And being in Memphis, it's a small city to a certain extent. Like if you're in the media industry in Memphis, you kind of know majority of the media professionals. And moving to Atlanta kind of just opened the door for me to kind of see where I could find my footing in, you know, Atlanta in the state of Georgia.
What was that transition like, going from covering the NBA to going into a whole different world of working? Because, I mean, you go from news to then working in the NBA, working for a team that, you know, had become much more recognizable. Really tied in with the team to this whole different world at the College Football Hall of Fame.
Honestly, it was more so trying to stay in the business with being family first. It was like putting my family in the forefront. It's like, I know I wanted to move it. We wanted to move to Atlanta. My time at the Grizzlies was great, but it was kind of like I wanted to do something different. You know, I wanted to like bet on myself. It's like if I move to a different city, I can make it happen. Whatever I put my mind to, kind of I can do it. And that's just been my experience, just networking and talking to people. So it was a very big change coming from, you know, just coming off of the court, going to the office, right? It was just a big change. But working at the Hall of Fame kind of gave me a lot of different experiences, taught me a lot of different things about how the corporate side of being a creative works. That's kind of where I learned, you know, about stakeholders and, you know, engagement and everything. Because at the Grizzlies, I was kind of just, this is fun. I get to make stories. I get to be with my home team, you know, different things like that. But it was showed me a different side of the business that I didn't know. And that was pretty much kind of what that ended up being.
I love that, because I think at least that resonates with me given my experience working in the NBA, because there's so many games and a lot of times you're just trying to get through each day, right? And just capture what's in front of you and then edit what's in front of you. I love hearing that at the College Football Hall of Fame, there seemed to be more maybe like a focus on strategy around the content and those kinds of things. As you were talking, though, I was curious, had you, before you moved to Atlanta, had you only been in Memphis, or had you moved to another city before then? Or was that mostly like Memphis was home and you were kind of leaving there?
It's kind of funny how that works, because born and raised in Memphis, and I went to school at MTSU, which is in Murfreesboro. But while I was in Murfreesboro, when I say at least twice a month, me and my friends are going to Atlanta. And that was kind of, that was like the thing. Like I kind of knew, and I had family growing here, family here growing up. So I always had interest in moving down here. It wasn't like a spur of the moment type of thing. Mm-hmm. But the more I, you know, traveled down here while I was in college and things like that and met other creatives and just meeting people that are making a way. You know, they were telling me that Atlanta is what you make it. You have the not gift of gab because I'm very shy. Oh, you might not get that from me. I'm very shy.
I don't get that from. I wouldn't have guessed that.
When it comes to like getting things that I want or getting meeting people that I want to know, like I know how to speak up and get out of that box. But when I was in school, Atlanta was kind of like I knew I was going to move there because it was just a city full of creatives, and we saw an opportunity to, you know, explore that side of like, you know, chasing your dreams kind of thing. And I've done so many projects outside of the 9-to-5 being down here, just being in the city, you know, and that was a good change.
That's awesome. I want to touch on something that I'm curious on and, mm-hmm. you know, Darius, I'd love to get your take on it as well. Mm-hmm. I'm a Latina woman, right? And you mentioned something, Sam, about, you know, being shy and like in the right environment, right? It can come out. And mm-hmm. I think one of the things that I've been thinking about as of late is like the perception that maybe other people have of how I, as a Latina woman, should behave in the mm-hmm. workplace. And yeah. so I'm curious if you, both of you, Sam and Darius, have similar thoughts about like how you show up in the workplace as yeah. a Black man. And like, if you feel like you have to tone it down or tone it up, like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Cause I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Great question.
I know I'm taking it kind of deep, but you mentioned like yeah. being shy and it just sparked that thought.
My thing is just like, I'm always unapologetically me. Like I can't not be myself. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I will ever tone that down because it's mm-hmm. just, if I'm not comfortable in myself in whatever arena I'm in or whatever room I'm in or mm-hmm. anything like that, it, not saying I shouldn't be there, you know, it's not like that, but I think being a Black man in kind of this industry, for me, it's kind of like, now I'm being able to be put in rooms that I always feel like I should have the opportunity to be in. Mm. Mm-hmm. And when I'm in those rooms, you know, I'm still Sam at the end of the day. You know, I'm still proud of who I am, proud of what I've accomplished. And, you know, I feel like beating the odds is cliche. But, you know, for me to have yeah. had the career I've had so far, you know, and I've done it by being myself the whole way. So, you know, those feelings are there and they have been, and those situations have come across, you know, in times in my career, but, you know, just being me has put me in places where I never thought I would be, to be honest.
I love that. That's awesome.
I think it's hard not to, right? Especially, yeah. you know,
true.
You know, we've kind of had some of these conversations like in passing before, and on, you know, it's always good around this time of year where we're having these episodes and it kind of digs it up, right?
Yeah,
when you're, speak when candidly you're a minority about it. Creative, like a lot of times you're walking in rooms, especially in the sports field, and it's not a whole lot of people that look like you, if any. I remember when I was in Texas.
Facts.
Like in our creative department, I was the only one out of 12 same. To 14 people, right? And I remember
same.
Walking into an office. I'm not gonna say who it was and but I was like, I'm the only one. Like, we can't hire anymore? Like, do we just not want to?
Hold up. Did that person know what you were referencing?
Like, oh no, I said much more than that.
Right? I'm sure.
I'm like, yeah. There's nobody else. At that time, there was no, not only were there no other Black employees on my staff, there were no other minorities on my staff.
Right.
And so I'm like, bro, I walk in here and none of these people can relate to anything that, you know, happens to me. Yeah. And that wasn't a dig. That was just like,
that's just a reality.
Hey, we got all these resumes. We can't pick one. Like, not saying that you have to, like, oh, hey, we got our quota.
Check a box.
It wasn't a quota or checking a box. It was just the reality of, like, it felt like at the time we weren't even trying. Now, since I've no longer worked there, they have, you know, hired multiple people of color, which is a good thing. But I think that if I would have had other people on my staff, like direct staff, maybe things would have been a little different. Not saying that I need it, but I've always known how to adjust. Growing up in Mississippi, going to Ole Miss, like, of being around people that aren't like you. But I was still, as Sam said, still able to find ways to be authentically me, because there's only so much code switching that you could do, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you find yourself, like, on a I walk in the door, I have to flip the switch, you're going to lose who you are. Like, you have to be authentically, and you have to find that creative balance. You have to find that professional balance of, how do I not lose who I am? Because then you're just going to be somebody else. You're employed by that place, but you're going to find yourself being somebody that you won't even know who you're looking at in the mirror. So I think that's how I've always tried to, like, always remain professional, but I'll also let people know that, like, hey, like, I'm cool. You cool? I'm cool. I've had to, you know, some of that black side has had to, you know, come out a little bit.
Yeah, showed a little bit sometimes, you know. You know?
I had to stand on a table or two, you know.
Yeah,
but
you know. Not literally, right?
Oh no!
Listen, I just imagined you jumping up on a table, Darius.
I was close, but no. It really wasn't the decision, and I don't regret any of that, right? Because the decision was not just for me, the employee; it was for the greater good of everybody, right?
Yeah, whether it was totally
money, whether it was a person that was another minority, whatever. It was always for the greater good of everything. And it also brought about change. It's just like when people talk about, I mean, with everything going on in the world right now with protests and all that, like, protesting is a good thing because you, like, disruption brings about change, right? And we don't have to go into depth, but sometimes you need some disruption to catch the eye and attention to make things change. So
totally. I mean, you were talking about it, like,
Savage Life
demographic makeup here with the disruption, but you saying that, it reminds me of, like, editing. Like, sometimes when you're editing something, you need a disruption to capture people's attention in a different way. And, you know, you mentioned so many things that I feel like we could talk about for hours, but code switching, right?
Yeah.
And I don't want to make assumptions about, you know, folks that are listening, but maybe for those who don't know, it's basically when you are in some cases, like for me, my code switching might change if I'm around other Latinos, because I might throw in some, like, Spanglish words, right? Or I might speak Spanish to them. So it's basically switching or, like, alternating, like, how you speak. Yep. What you say,
how
right?
You walk, how you know, dress, how you,
just how you carry yourself.
Yeah. Just to well, and Sam, Sam, you were saying, like, you've brought this, like, level of authenticity to work. And I think, I love hearing that, because looking back in my own career early on, I definitely didn't have the confidence to kind of, like, bring my full self. And now, looking back at all the things I've accomplished, like you, I'm like, no, like, I'm gonna bring who I am and is who I am. And it's gotten me to all of these places thus far. Who's to say it can't help me continue? So I love, you know, hearing about the confidence in both of you, and even Darius, like, the confidence for you to go have that conversation with someone is so important. And I'm sure, like, listening to you, I'd be like, I would be scared to say that. But if I did that, I would be so proud of myself looking back, you know? So,
yeah,
I don't know. That's really cool. I appreciate y'all, you know, both sharing that.
And I can speak, I guess, from my experience, just like being the person in the office, in my opinion, that I'm myself all the time. And it opens up everyone else around you to kind of just relax and like, you know, it's kind of, you learn more about people because they feel comfortable talking to you and things like, I'm not judging you. This is what we do for a living, right? There's no point in faking who you are in one building. For one part of your day, you're a whole different person. But when you leave here, you turn into another person. And it's, of course, keep it professional, you know, but like, relax, always. Be yourself, show your personality in the workplace. Don't, you know, keep it professional, of course, but you know.
But yeah, people take cues off of your energy sometimes. And, you know, my partner, my husband, who, you know, he's our, not our connection right now, but we've all had ties to University of Georgia, but shout out, you know, he coaches. And that's one thing that he said he learned really early on in his career, that how he shows up, the energy that he shows up with, can affect so many people. And I that is so true. Like, even, you know, before COVID, I work remote now, so it's a little bit different, but like the energy you bring into a space is like super, super important.
Talk about your time at the Hall of Fame. Like, what, you get there, you get adjusted. It's definitely not, you know, the day to day, like you don't have, you know, games. So
yeah.
How long did it take you to kind of get adjusted to whatever this new life was?
It took me a couple months. Like, a number on it, I couldn't tell you. But I think being at the Hall of Fame and being, it was more social media stuff. And at the Grizzlies, of course, we were doing things that went on social, but the Hall of Fame was like strictly focused on showcasing the exhibits, the artifacts, the things like that. And that was something I honestly just didn't have much experience in as far as being social first. So I want to say maybe 3 to 4 months kind of when I learned kind of what the identity of, I knew what the Hall of Fame was, don't get me wrong. It was an attraction in Atlanta, and big, you know, big things were happening there with the, what's it called, when people are inducted, things like that. But being like strictly socially driven, like retention rates and learning about things like that, it took a while for me to kind of switch my brain to that, right? It was like, okay, so yeah, I'm used to, you know, following the basketball, telling stories and things like that, but now this is the arena I'm in, and you know, this is where I have to shift my focus to.
I know you just said that, you know, it's more so switching your brain to a social focus, right? What do you think is one of the biggest thing, or some of the biggest things that you learned there that prepared you for the next few years after leaving there that helped you, you know, on that is path forward?
Great question. I would say, and this is being completely transparent, is that what you think is right isn't always what is required for a client or a company or things like that. Because like the way I was thinking about it was storytelling, highlighting things. And I had to kind of take a step back and realize like, okay, what I'm used to and what I think might be the right thing to do isn't always necessarily what the company or whoever you're working with needs. And that was really, honestly, my first experience being in a situation where I could kind of do what I wanted, but it had to align with brand guidelines and, you know, kind of the vision of the Hall of Fame.
You ended up leaving the Hall of Fame and went up the road to Little Athens.
Went up the road
to Athens, Georgia, place that we've all spent some good time at. What did you... This was your first time. So your career is interesting because you go from the news to a team, then a private entity that's in sports, but not, you know, sports specific around the clock 360. Right. But then you go and work for a team, but on the collegiate level, something that you had never you know, had the opportunity mm-hmm. to do. What was that experience like, and what was that adjustment?
It was a big adjustment because not working in college athletics before, and it's, I feel like my career is really backwards, because most people go college NBA or college pro level anything, and I went the reverse, right? Mm-hmm. So while I was at Georgia, I was the director of creative for women's basketball, and I'm a big women's basketball fan. Like, I keep up with everything. It was really my first experience being kind of like in the room with the coach, mm-hmm. you know, being hands-on with the coach, like the coach calling me, the players like texting me and things like that. But that position also allowed me to be creative in ways I didn't think I could be, you know, from recruiting photo shoots to graphic templates to just running the social media platforms to kind of, and that's a story in itself. It honed a lot of skills, and it was a very eye-opening experience. But it was very, very fun.
Who would you say some of your biggest influences and kind of people who have helped you, like, along this journey? Like I said, you've touched multiple levels. Some people never get a chance. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never worked in pro sports, right? So, yeah. But you've been able to work the pros. You've been able to work TV. You've been able to work, you know, on the collegiate level. Who would mm-hmm. you say helped you the most, or not even just the most? Who are people who have helped you, like, grow and acclimate to where you are today?
Yeah. Is it weird that I have a person at every stop?
No, that's great.
Cool. So
I know who you're not
going to start down the line. I was telling you said that. So I'm one of those people to where I ultimately respect people that, I guess, for quote unquote, put you on, mm-hmm. but in a teaching way, not like, you know, whatever that might be. So when I was in news, I was trained by a guy named Romeo, and Romeo was like the guy at the news station, right? Like, mm-hmm. he did all of the sweep stories. For those who don't know what the sweeps are, those are like the big stories, like I think every quarter, where it's like just a big news story, right? And he literally invited me to like step away from the edit bay and like, I want you to come with me and show me like just the different focus types, lighting, things like that. And he truly, I would say, him and the guy I'm about to mention, like, helped me start my career, if that makes sense. So mm-hmm. it was Romeo at Local 24. And then when I went to the Grizzlies, my man, Steph, when I say, like, multiple late-night conversations with him after games and every kind of big shoot we had, he made sure to kind of, like, hey, you know, put the camera in my hands. Hey, I want to see what you do. You kind of, like, throw me into the fire, right? And Steph has been a big help as far as kind of learning how the business works from a professional standpoint. He works with NFL films and things like that. He's currently the director of photography at the Grizzlies. So just learning just lighting and or honing lighting and, you know, just angles and things like that. Like, he was the first one that gave me the chance to shoot a basketball game. Like, when I was at the Grizzlies, it was kind of news story type of things. That's why the transition from the news to the Grizzlies was kind of not necessarily easy, but it was familiar, right? Mm-hmm. And I never forget, it was one game where he couldn't be there because he had something to do with, like, his son or something. He was like, do you want to shoot? And I had the Sony F55 with the Cabrio, and I was like, this is my first time kind of shooting a game. And ever since then, I kind of just fell in love with shooting basketball. Right. Mm-hmm. And that was someone I met, you know, at the Grizzlies. That's my second stop, you know. And in my collegiate career, I have to give a shout out to Amaya Lacey. Right. So
shout out Amaya.
Shout out to Amaya, man. So Amaya, I would say, is influenced in a way where She has edits. If whoever's listening to this and you don't know Amaya, I want you to go find Amaya and look at the edits she does. And it was so easy to her, right? It was like, I'm like, you know, I'm kind of older in a collegiate realm, you know? So I'm like, what is this? You know, like, what are you doing right now? This looks crazy. Right. And Amaya, I would say she influences me in the sense of where, like, I'm a big fan of her work. She's a friend of mine, you know, and just like pushing the limits of things, right? Like, it's something I aspire to do, you know, and it's kind of weird being like mid-30s and someone like early 20s, like, you know, but I would say those are my main three that I have right now.
So I'm curious, we've talked about a lot of things, but what would you say, if you had to choose, is your favorite memory or moment from working in sports?
Oh, that's an easy one for me. So it was a while ago. So when I was with the Grizzlies, of course, Ja Morant got his jersey retired at Murray State. Mm-hmm. Right. And that was such a memorable or like favorite experience for me, because I think that was my first time professionally where I was just like lit to go do what I wanted to do. Right. It was kind of like, hey, do you want to go to this thing? We need you to cover it. There was no like instructions. There was no shot list. There was nothing. And I made it my own. And that was my first time in my career that, and for an event, I guess, of that magnitude to me at the time, mm-hmm. like that made it one of those projects where I'll always be happy, you know, I was able to do that. And, you know, kind of just being that close to an NBA player to people might seem not intimidating or anything like that, but he was super like welcoming, and the staff at Murray State was super welcoming, asked me, you know, if there anything I needed, helped me get access to different places I wanted shots and to shoot and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it felt like it happened in a blink. Like, we were there, it happened, and I was back on the road back to Memphis. But that's a project that will always stick with me.
A lot of people who work in the sports industry, right? Whether you're working high school, college, professional, the vast majority never get to cover an athlete of substance. When I got to Georgia, day one, I'm filming Ty Gurley as a sophomore who's already one of the best running backs in the country, not on the team, in the country.
In the country, yeah.
Right? Now, I will say, Ole Miss has had some amazing athletes. Shout out to Dexter McCluster. Shout out to Michael Orr. Shout out to Paray Jarrett. Like, first round, second round, third round draft picks, right?
I
say that to bring it to Ty Gurley was a world-class athlete. Ja Morant is a world-class athlete, right? So bring all that together, it's like, what was it like when you walk in a gym and you have this elite athlete that you is so unpredictable, you don't know what he's going to do?
I wasn't like starstruck or anything, because I mean, athletes are people, right? They are the same people as us. But like working with athletes for this long, just in general, I think it makes you more interested in the athlete, right? Like, you working in sports, you aim to make them look a certain way, make them look good, show highlights and things like that. But I think my experience working so close with athletes this long is like, I kind of want to tell their story, because they, working in sports, you get access that people would dream of to whoever that is, whether it's a pro athlete, college athlete, you know. And for me, it's more so like a humbling experience. Like, you appreciate the fact that you get to work alongside people like this, that, you know, you get access, you get to hear, you know, things that they say, talk to them one-on-one. And, you know, for me as a creative, it just makes me want to tell stories of the athletes that I work with as a whole, right? And that's college, NBA, freelance, you know, that type of thing.
I asked that question because a lot of times, and you brought this up saying that you weren't starstruck.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are, right? Not, you know, I tell that story about Ty Gurley. I wasn't starstruck because I had met Super Bowl winning quarterbacks and rookie of the year NFL, like all of these, got used to it some kind of way, right?
Yeah.
I met Miss America once and Vince Gill and like stars, but it never was a moment of like starstruck. It's like, oh, they're normal people. How did you like, how did you get to that mindset? It was like, I mean, John Morant, like, oh, not being starstruck.
I honestly don't think there's a way from my experience. I'm just like that. If that makes sense. Like once you kind of, I feel like you have to see someone be down to earth before, you know, there's the Hollywood aspect of things. Right. Mm-hmm. But once I see that you're like a normal person, that's how I'm gonna look at you. Right. So if you, this is anybody, if you do like the Hollywood kind of standoffish kind of thing, I just kind of let that be you, you know? But if you're a down to earth person, I look at you that way regardless. So it just makes it easier because like you're just normal. You're just a normal person.
Love that. That is so cool. And it actually leads me to another question, which is what gets you most excited to work every day? Like what gets you most hype about going to work?
What gets me going is like not taking what I do for granted. You know, like I get to wake up and make things every day. I get to wake up and, you know, tell a story every day or introduce something to someone that might not be familiar with it every day. And to me, that's just cool. It means a lot to me to kind of, you know, take pride in what I do and realize that, you know, it's not something to be taken for granted. Working in sports is amazing. And, you know, and it's an ever-growing industry, right? Every day is a new technique that you should learn or a different challenge, you know, to, you know, kind of keep up with everything. It's like constantly moving. And, you know, for me, waking up every day and knowing that, like, you know, I put food on the table just doing something that I love to do, you know, it makes it all worth it.
Working in the sports industry can be extremely, like, heavy, tough, like, busy. What are some things that you do kind of outside of work or, you know, your current job to kind of keep you going or kind of taking you out of it, like to rest? Like, what do you do in your non-working time?
It's kind of a odd answer, but like I work more, but not within the sports world, right? So I might do like passion projects with my friends or, you know, that's just us just hanging out, you know, it's not like you have a shot list, a deadline, you know, it's kind of like we all just get together with our cameras and like, hey, you want to go to this spot over here and film something and, you know, kind of just edit it as you go. It's not like, okay, I'm, you know, still doing something I love to do, but there's no pressure behind it. Do that. I'm a big family guy. I spend a lot of time with my family. We are a gaming household. So we play the game together. You know, we do a lot of things together as a family. And that's kind of like, for me, kind of like a good break in the busy sports world, you know, because right now at Georgia Tech Athletics, and we've talked about this before, is like until I got to Georgia Tech, I've never experienced a crossover season, right? So it's like seeing how busy that is, it's like makes me make sure that I take time for myself and, you know, my hobbies, like playing a game with my son or, you know, doing things with my family, my dog. You know, it's kind of how I take a break from everything.
Looking back, what is some advice that you would give to your younger self about working as a creative in the sports industry?
Some advice I would give to my younger self. It's so cliche to say keep going, but I think sometimes as a sports creative, the long hours and things like that might get to you sometimes. But I would tell my younger self, like, you know, everything is worth it in the end. You know, everything that you're doing, and this goes for anybody, anything that you're doing that might be hard or might seem difficult at the time, you might not see, you know, the not light on the end of the tunnel, but you know, like you're putting in all these hours as a sports creative, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, you got to take a step back and be like, this is what you might have prayed for, this is what you wanted to do. And my advice to my younger self would be like, just keep going, right? Like, you're living a dream, right? You're not doing something that should be taken for granted. And I would say, you know, just push through whatever it is that you might feel like you're dealing with at the time.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier that your family is a gaming household. So Darius and I have a little game for you.
And we come up with the game as soon as we say, hey, we like to play a game. You get 30 seconds to list as many of whatever topic we come up with in 30 seconds. So today's list is you're preparing for game day or edit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Name all of the things that are very essential to getting the job done for you.
On a game day?
Game day, project, doesn't matter.
Okay.
All right. So on my cue, you don't get to start the clock. I start the clock.
All right.
All right. And 3, 2, 1.
So game day essentials, project essentials. I would say for me, coffee or tea, snacks. Okay. Heavy on the Uncrustables right now.
Okay.
playlist for me, primarily like Catronata, house music, things like that. Good headphones. Gotta have some good headphones. And maybe a podcast.
Oh, cool. 5. Oh, that's it.
That 30 seconds?
30 right now. You don't need you don't need a laptop. You don't need a camera. You don't need a memory card.
Those were like a given.
No.
Okay.
That ain't how that works.
Okay. My bad. You said a project. I was thinking, you know, I'm about to sit down for an edit.
You got to have a computer, you know. But
True.
This is your answers, not mine.
All right, bet. The computer was there already for everyone listening.
Yeah, I guess. So, Sam, thank you for... Oh, 2 questions. One, and we kind of alluded to this earlier when the 3 of us were talking, but what does it mean to you to be a Black creative in this industry? Or do you even think about that?
I think about it, and I can speak on what it means to me personally. Of course it's personal, but for me, working in sports, it means a lot because it's afforded me a lot of opportunities that people in my family have not seen. And simple things is like going to a game, you know, and this is speaking from my personal experience, right? So working in sports means a lot to me because there are certain projects, there are certain work trips I've had to take, there are certain people I've met that if I tell my family members, they are surprised, right? But that is a Tuesday afternoon for me, right? So it makes me prideful, you know, to have somewhat of a legacy to, you know, that my son loves to hear about, you know, when I get home, loves to see things that I work on, places that I might go, you know, for work. And to me, just, I don't really know the words to put forward, but it makes me proud to be working in an industry that allows me to show family members, friends, things that, you know, that it's possible, I guess, in a sense, that, you know, that you, and I think for me, especially with my friends that I've known for a long time, they've seen me kind of, I guess, put the work in to do the things that I do, right? So I think working in sports for me means a lot.
With that being said, what would be some advice that you would give to younger Black creatives who are looking to get into this industry?
During your journey into this industry, don't let anyone make you feel like you don't belong in the industry, right? There is a place for you. There's a place for us. And that doesn't mean you have to, you know, dim your light or be smaller to get in the rooms that you feel like you need to be in. And I would say, you know, a no is always a yes in the sports world, right? Especially when you're trying to break into it. So, you know, just keep your head down and it'll work out when it needs to and it will.
I like that you said that, and that a no is always a yes. And when I hear that, it reminds me of sometimes a no is just a not yet, right?
And right.
A door closing, another one is opening somewhere else. Now, you may have to go down the hall, around the corner, around the street, you know, five blocks over. Your opportunity is somewhere. It just may not be right there where you at the door that you're knocking on, right? So I like that you said that, because that could be interpreted a million different ways. But when I hear that, it means like, you know, you have to have some patience in this industry.
Right.
There's a lot going on in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And someone telling you no a lot of times isn't the end of the world.
Correct.
It's just saying like, hey, maybe this isn't
not right now,
or maybe this isn't your destination. And they may not even be saying, hey, you should look somewhere else. They may not be telling you that. And that that no right now may not be, I mean, in 6 months, is it the same no? And sometimes you have to take that no and be like, you know what? I'm going to ask some questions behind the no. Because if there's a, hey, I want this position, and they say, nah, it's not for you.
Yeah.
You can then ask the questions, okay, whether here or somewhere else, what are the things that I should be getting better at or preparing? What would prepare me to be ready for this?
Right.
Right? But a lot of times we'll
storm those doors,
And this is for anybody, like Black, creative, white, Asian, whoever. When someone tells you, nah, not right now, if you're not asking those questions behind that, it's like, hey, if you're a higher up and I'm asking you, okay, well, what would better position me for this? That person is doing you a disservice if they can't give you any answer. And that may, a lot of times we want to be places that aren't meant for us.
Right.
That have a end date. Right. But we're like, oh man, I don't want to move. So I want to climb the ladder here. And sometimes you got to move around. Now, I will say this younger generation does do a lot more moving around than our generation ever thought about doing. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, people have to, they have to take that into account, that sometimes that no is a yes. It's just a delayed yes. Everything's not going to happen right now when you want it, how you want it, where you want it, you know, and for the reason. Life doesn't work that way.
And I'm a big believer in divine timing, right?
Absolutely.
So everything happens when it's supposed to, whether that's when you want it to or not. And everything that's meant for you will happen for you when the time is right.
What is for you will not skip you.
Yes,
divine time is going to happen. If you're supposed to walk outside today and it's supposed to snow on your head or rain on your head, it's going to happen if it's meant to happen for you or to you, right? And sometimes things are happening for you. And this is for everyone in the creative industry. Sometimes it's not your call. Somebody else gets it, then clap for them. Because if you can't clap for somebody else, then, you know, it says a lot. It's not all about you.
It says a lot about you.
You know what I'm saying? Yep. So, Sam, appreciate your time. Appreciate you, you know, appreciate carving you out the time to, you know, share your story, share your journey. And hopefully people can pick up on some of, you know, your experience to help prepare them for what's next in theirs. And just appreciate you, man, supporting the podcast.
Yes, sir.
And thanks again for coming through.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.